coming up next, Minding Your Business, with marketing strategist and author Robin Block. This former New Yorker brings on the tough love to help you separate the gems from the junk and get the job done. Listen and learn. It's real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. Now, here's Robin.
I don't have to tell you that we've been facing a pretty volatile economy over the past few years. It's difficult to predict or even understand the forces driving buyer behavior, the stock market, or why Facebook bought photo sharing app Instagram for $1 billion worth of cash and shares. Let's get back down to earth. On today's show, we're going to talk about the risks you face in your own business every day. You may not have $1 billion in assets, but you still have to manage what you do have. That's what we're going to try to help you figure out. Balancing out the personal and the business, cash flow, what to do about seasonal fluctuations, and more. My guest today is Justin Fisher, an Air Force captain turned financial advisor, who's going to share with us how you can better manage the risky side of your business and maybe even squeeze some extra value from it too. Minding Your Business is about giving you the tools and information you need to start, run, and grow your small business. Are you starting one? Do you own a business? Tell us about it or ask questions. We'll answer on the air by calling 866-712-1300 or give us a shout on Twitter or Facebook at MYB Media. Before we introduce our guest, let's consider what Risk was really all about in 1983 in this trailer for the movie Risky Business, starring Tom Cruise. Some things never change.
You got the place all to yourself?
Woo! Just take those old records off the shelf.
That's her. She's fantastic. Yeah. Let me do anything stupid.
Don't worry.
I like that old time of rock and roll.
Who's the U-boat commander?
Don't try to take me to a disco.
I don't remember giving permission for a party, Joe.
A party?
It's still like that old time of rock and roll.
I've got a trig midterm tomorrow, and I'm being chased by Guido, the killer pimp.
Kind of music just soothes the soul.
Doesn't anyone want to accomplish anything, or do we just want to make money?
Make money. Make a lot of money.
There's a time for playing it safe. And a time for risky business.
You might say my guest Justin Fisher has some experience with risky business. After attending the U.S. Air Force Academy, Justin served as a logistics officer, rank captain in charge of running the airport adjacent to the main Frankfurt Airport in Germany. The Rhein-Main AB was the busiest hub for moving passengers during Operation Enduring Iraqi Freedom. After leaving Germany, Justin landed back in his hometown of Tacoma at McChord Air Force Base. Once out of the Air Force, Justin went to work for a large heavy civil contractor on the finance accounting side. Justin is now a senior financial advisor with Moss Adams Wealth Advisors. He's a certified financial planner and an accredited investment fiduciary analyst. His MBA is in portfolio theory and financial analysis from the University of Washington. Joining me now is Justin Fisher. Welcome to Minding Your Business.
Thanks, Robin. Appreciate having me. That's a heck of an intro.
Well, you deserve it. What are some of the financial risks a company faces?
Yeah, right now in the environment, I mean, there's obviously a lot going on with the economy. I would say that business owners in the private space really need to pay attention to the diversified streams that they're getting from their business. So what are the different areas that you're receiving value and income from? What are your customer bases? Who are your partners in business? And really taking a holistic view of how am I getting as diversified as possible.
So you're saying that if you diversify every aspect of your business, you can reduce risk?
Absolutely.
Can you ever eliminate risk?
It's tough. I don't think so. Not with a business owner. Not as a business. Maybe once you sell it.
How close can you get, do you think?
You can get close. You can get close by having a lot of diversification. You can get close by having very strong cash flows. You can get close by building very strong relationships and networks within the industry that you're in.
And where would you develop those relationships? What aspect are you talking about?
it's a two-way street. You know, your customers can be an advocate to you. Your suppliers can be an advocate for you. And then, of course, you know, different types of professional organizations that you're involved in. It's key to make sure that you're understanding what are the different areas of value that I can extract by having those relationships.
So what do you mean when you say you want your customers to be your advocate?
Right. So the idea of referrals from customers, being able to turn a customer into someone who is just providing a transactional, getting a transactional service from you, to someone who really feels like you're deeply helping them. Someone
who's
getting value.
Isn't that more of a marketing function, or do you consider that a financial function?
I think it turns into a marketing function via delivering strong service and having a competitive advantage in the marketplace.
And then turning that customer into someone who's going to provide consistent revenue to you?
Absolutely. You know, someone who's going to not only provide consistent revenue to you, but talk to their friends, talk to other businesses about what you can do for them.
So beyond your customers, you also mentioned that your partners can be advocates. Do you mean like suppliers?
Suppliers, absolutely. The vendor streams that you have.
So how would you manage them on the financial side and get them to help you minimize your risk?
Mm-hmm. I think on the financial side, it's looking at what type of mutually beneficial relationship you can create with different type of financial structures. So how can you create a relationship with a supplier or a vendor to where you are decreasing their risk because you're signing up maybe to an additionally long contract, or you're creating a different synergy to a different area of business that they might want to interact with, introducing them, kind of that two-way street, reciprocating relationship there.
So you're talking about contractual terms.
Yeah.
That help you both to reduce risk.
Yes.
So give me a little bit more specific in that, what that might be.
Yeah. So one of the examples of really looking and saying, okay, what can I do is let's say you're a contractor and you're out there and you're a heavy civil contractor and you happen to be building some vertical buildings. And a diversification technique that you may have in your business is, well, I want to have a sand and gravel pit, for example. So I'm now having inventory where I don't normally have inventory as a contractor. I'm having a different form of business. And then so if I have a sand and gravel pit and I have I'm hiring on with another dirt contractor, a sub of mine, who's hauling out that sand and gravel pit to my vertical building, what can I do with that dirt contractor to see maybe they can haul some sand and gravel to other jobs that they have at a reduced cost? So how can I help them out?
So you're helping them do business, and in turn, you're hoping to get what?
You're hoping to get time and value from them. So timely delivery, you're hoping to get everything that they have. So when you're in a crunch, when you're bidding a job and you need maybe that extra $50,000 under budget, they're going to be there for help for you because they know in the future you have an additional income stream for them.
So that's where operations really impacts finance.
Absolutely.
And vice versa. They can each help each other within the business, but you do that by leveraging arrangements with your suppliers.
You can. You know, having long-term contracts in place and having a bench suppliers, right? So not only the concept of diversification is a risk mitigation technique, well, you want to have that if you have your A supplier, your B supplier, or your sub, make sure that you have a bench that you can call on in case one goes bad.
That's interesting you say that, because I think Boeing has been going through huge issues in managing suppliers. I mean, that's really the extreme example, where not only do they have a huge base of suppliers, but they're all over the world. Mm-hmm. And all the impacts of what that means in terms of shipping and all that. So if we take that back down to the small business level, mm-hmm. I think there are diminishing returns in having too many suppliers, mm-hmm. but you do need to have a certain number in order to make sure you balance that correctly. But I think maybe a small business person would ask, well, if I divide up my purchasing among too many suppliers, I don't have any buying power. How do you mitigate that?
Yeah, if you... You want to look at the value that you're getting from that relationship. So in the context of Boeing and bringing it back to the small business, where they're outsourcing to in Italy, for example, and having a tremendous nest egg in that, a lack of diversification there because of maybe cutting costs. If you are, for every dollar that you're receiving, you're making sure that you're able to bring those costs, like if Boeing was to go into the U.S. and get a better product, better engineered, they're looking at saying, okay, well, maybe I can add more revenue stream. That's going to increase my revenue in the future because of the value that I'm getting out of that relationship, even though it's a little bit more expensive. For a business owner, a small business owner, not having that global, perhaps, relationship, the idea would be, what is the value that I'm receiving from the relationships that I have? So when I'm my outflow is going out, how is it coming back to me? What other streams is it coming back to me in? And do an assessment of that.
How can a small business owner find information about how to do that better? Or who would they talk to about that particular aspect? Would it be a financial advisor? Or would it be somebody who specializes in outsourcing, let's say?
It could be both. Maybe someone who specializes in business strategy. From a financial advising perspective, you'd want to look for someone who's, you know, really looking at your personal life in the context of the business life, which I think we'll get into. But I think a lot of it also is from those who are advising your business. Who's your core advisor? Is it your CPA that you're really going to ask those questions for? Are they helping you with structuring? Do you have a business attorney that's working closely in concert with your CPA that's looking at all the tax implications of this, the financial statement implications of this? Those would be the advisors I'd want to reach out to.
It seems to me, well, at least I had a friend of mine this week say to me, well, isn't my banker the same as my accountant? Don't they do the same thing? And I think part of the problem that a lot of small business people have that are really good at what they do, right, whether they're a plumber or an artist or whatever it is that they don't really understand all the players involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very important to explain the difference. You know, what is the CPA doing?
Yeah, exactly. So in a context of what a CPA should be doing is they really should be looking at your business holistically and minimizing risk on one side for you, assessing where your risks are at. From a financial standpoint, looking at your balance sheet, looking at your profitability, looking at your cash flows, ratios, these kinds of things. And then also protecting what you have, trying to minimize that tax liability you have, taking positions with the IRS that are going to be in your favor and that are going to be good for the business strategy that you have. The outflow of that makes you look good to a banker.
Ah, that's a good point. We're here speaking with Justin Fisher of Moss Adams Wealth Advisors about financial risk for the small business. After the break that's coming up soon, we'll be talking about more about risk, more about how do you balance your personal portfolio with your business portfolio. What are those assets? How do you manage them and so forth? We'd love to hear your questions. Please call 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. You can also get to us at Facebook at MYB Media. We'll answer your questions on the air. We're here with Justin Fisher once again of Moss Adams Wealth Advisors. We'll be right back.
Now we return to Minding Your Business with Robin Block on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. Once again, here's Robin.
Our show today is about managing financial risk in a small business. I'm here with my guest, Justin Fisher. What's the difference between risk in a small business versus risk in a large business?
Right. You know, that's a good question. I think one of the fundamental concepts to recognize is a large business has different users of the data that they provide, public companies, for example. So the risk in a large business is largely how they look in the marketplace, how they're being perceived to investors who are a huge source of their capital, to other users of their financial statements. For a small business in a private setting, of course, none of that is known. And I think a lot of risks to a small business has to do internally with the sophistication of the business. So what systems do you have in place? What controls do you have in place? Not only like IT systems, for example, but what literally controls do you have in place against fraud, right? That's something where, you know, a large Boeing has less worry about that given the sizable controls that they have there. Small businesses have to worry about strategy. Am I still, you know, if it's a family-run business, are some of the family dynamics, which are very real, right, in small businesses, are those getting in the way of what's going on in the marketplace.
You talk about systems and controls. Let's address that first.
Sure.
What kind of systems do you need to put in place?
So from a risk control standpoint, you need to make sure for sure that you have controls in place around your cash flow and that you have employees with controls to make sure that they don't have an ability to access cash or there's no embezzlement opportunities or if you at least minimize that. You need to recognize as a small business owner, I've been told this many, many times or seen this at conferences where auditors are out there, it's just a matter of time before your employees are going to try and steal from you.
Really?
Don't expect it to not happen. Plan for it to happen. Put controls in place to prevent it.
Often when we talk about systems, it's people, process, technology, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what people internally are the first ones you bring on to manage your financial life in your business?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think you definitely want to make an assessment from a financial standpoint of when you want to jump from a controller or, you know, kind of lower accountant type level to a controller to maybe a CFO. Like
and
that growth over time is
what
huge.
Kind of money do you have to be generating to find the right point to do that?
Yeah, that's a funny question. The reason I smile is because there's businesses there in the hundreds of million dollar space that may not have a CFO, right? And so...
And what's let's talk about that. Okay, we know, you know, getting back to the different players, right? Bookkeeper
mm-hmm.
is kind of looking at your cash in, cash out,
mm-hmm.
maybe using Intuit payroll for you or something like that.
Sure, QuickBooks, something like that.
You have a few employees, whatever. And
mm-hmm.
then we have the accountant that you bring on every quarter or whatever to review the bookkeeper's work and yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the... We have the controller. What
yep.
is the? How is the controller different?
Really looking at implementing some strategy around things. So taking the numbers and then letting the owner see them in a way that the owners can understand and make sense out of what's going on financially. And look and say, okay, well, I think I can fix that.
What is the controller looking at?
Oh, the controller's looking at the finances, the tax liabilities that are going out. They're running the day-to-day financial operations.
Aren't there key metrics that they look at, too?
Ratios.
What kind of ratios are they looking at?
What's our accounts payable, you know, ratio? So, for example, how quickly are we paying our money? Is money going out the door? We want to try and slow that down, right?
Or how quickly money is coming in.
Money's coming in the door. Yeah, our accounts receivable.
Hopefully that's happening.
Yeah. So maybe there's an opportunity for you to slow down your payments on the outside without making your suppliers angry.
Yeah, you don't want to damage your reputation.
You don't, and then there's opportunities to quicken the cash coming in. A real interesting ratio is kind of an operational cycle ratio, a cash conversion cycle. You want to know from the minute you buy something how long it takes you to turn that into inventory, to get it in the door and turn it into cash, get it in your bank account.
And that will increase your overall net profit. Is what we're looking at.
It increases your growth because now you have that cash to go use for working capital, to go buy different things. Increases the value of the business. Absolutely.
Like your marketing department is saying, hey, we need money to do this because you keep telling us you want top line increases.
Yeah.
So we can't do that without letting people know we're out there and
et
cetera.
And key to benchmark it against your competitors, I would say.
Oh, okay.
Not just to look at those ratios internally. It is good to look at them internally and see some trending over time. Are we getting better? Why are things changing? But how am I doing in the construction space?
And, you know,
as an example,
you said that a lot of the information from the small business is private.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you find out what those benchmarks are?
Right. So you'll go to, an organization, Moss Adams is an example, of course, collects a lot of data as an accounting firm, has a lot of best practices, and then can sort that by industry and give you a good idea of for which revenue stream each of those financial metrics are on an average. And you could kind of check yourself out against an average.
I had someone on my show from a company called Corelytics,
mm-hmm.
and they're a financial dashboard for a small business, and they're starting to collect some of that data and starting to make some comparisons for the small business.
Because mm-hmm.
public companies, all that data is available if you know where to look.
Right.
But the small business, not so much. And I think there's a danger as a small business in trying to compare yourself to a business that might be in your industry, but is so much larger than you that you aren't going to make good decisions because the metrics are going to be off.
Yeah, absolutely.
Our show today is all about managing financial risk with my guest, Justin Fisher. And I'm Robin Block. You're listening to Minding Your Business. So we talked about some key ratios. How frequently should somebody be looking at that with their controller?
Yeah, so quarterly is a nice time to do that. You know, looking at what you're doing on a quarterly basis. I mean, monthly, you're really running the reports, of course, but on a quarterly basis, how are we trending, you know, in the context of looking at those ratios?
And we hear about that for personal finance as well,
mm-hmm.
in terms of don't look at your, you know, it's like weighing yourself every day. Like if you're trying to lose weight, you shouldn't really be looking at all your numbers every day because you can make yourself nuts and it goes up and down. And those short-term trends really aren't as important as the long-term view. The other thing that we talk about in small business is how do you balance that personal thing that's happening with the business stuff that's happening?
Right.
And how influential that is. So let's address the family business first. I think that's kind of interesting,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it just seems like in a family business, it's really affecting everyone because you have them as employees and so forth.
I think a family business has its own dynamics that need to be really respected in the context that what you said about the family, the dynamics that are going on are real players within that business environment. And so understanding how the, let's call it corporate balance sheet of the business is slowly over time or has already been kind of decoupled from the personal balance sheet of the owners and how that relationship works is key. So what are some of the things that a family business can do to make sure that their family is on track to be financially independent and the business is successful and remains solvent? And I think a risk that you pointed out of too much short-term thinking is a real risk, right? The economy looks tough, there's things going on. How can we take a longer-term view, both with your personal assets and within the business?
Can you give me an example of a family business you've worked with,
mm-hmm.
where you gave them very concrete things that they could do?
Yeah, so a family business, I'll take a couple of examples so we don't call out the names here.
No,
but
no.
The ideas would be, you know, look at the concentration that you have. So all business owners, if you're looking at a family business as a business unit, have three real buckets of assets. So they're liquid assets. Those are stocks and bonds, stuff that's traded on exchanges. Real assets, I'm talking inventory, property, plant, and equipment, buildings, real estate, and then just the business interest, the interest in the operating entity, for example, or other operating entities. And so you want to take a holistic view of how those three things work together.
And the business has some of it, and the person has some of it. It's kind of mixed together.
Yeah, if the person owns the real estate that the business is on, owns the business, and then has an investment account, now you have all of these three buckets. They're rolled up into one overall pie. And so an example of that would be looking at the real estate, for example, and saying, well, gosh, we have this great opportunity to buy an additional building next door that's 8% cap rate on a triple net lease, which just means that it's going to pay you 8% when you take the value of the building, at the cash flow divided by the value. And you can say, well, that sounds like a good deal. Well, does that over-concentrate my risk? Do you need that cash flow? Do you need an asset that might appreciate in value instead of something that pays an income stream? And unless you're looking at all of those three buckets in the context, you're going to be not making the best decisions over time. So even though that building looked good, as an example, maybe you should have taken that capital and put it back into the business, invested some of it, those kinds of things.
I think there are things on the personal side, too, that need to be worked in. We have business, let's look at the expense side of the equation. Like,
mm-hmm.
what do we need the cash for,
uh-huh.
and at what period of time do we need it?
Mm-hmm.
So on the personal side, we look at that like saving for college, saving for retirement,
yeah.
that kind of thing. But on the business side, we're looking at growth. And what other expenses are we looking at there?
Other capital calls that may be coming from the other business interests they own. You know, very few owners own one business. You get involved in different side businesses with colleagues of yours, with those in other businesses, to try and increase your overall worth. And I would say one of the key things to recognize is that putting together a personal financial plan, so to speak, Robin, is not a retirement plan. A retirement plan looks at when you want to retire, it takes into cash flows and taxes and these kinds of things. But being able to look in the context of the business and how am I going to make strategic decisions in the business that are going to affect me personally.
Our show today is all about financial risk, and I'm here with Justin Fisher. We will be right back after the break.
And now, we return to Minding Your Business with Robin Block on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. Here's Robin.
I'm here with Justin Fisher of Moss Adams Wealth Advisors, and we're talking about financial risk. Do you have any questions for my guest? We would love to hear them. Give us a call or tweet at MIB Media or call 866-712-1300. We were talking about family dynamics and family finance and how do you balance the asset side, which is stocks and bonds and real assets and your business interest and how you're making money there, with all the things you have to spend money on, not only your family and what you have to save for and the time horizon of when you spend and then what you have to spend for your business. I think we need to cover that a little bit more for the small business, because I think a lot of even businesses that don't have any employees are wondering, how do I balance all those things? Yeah. What does a solopreneur do when they're worried about their retirement?
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things they can do?
Yeah. Well, some of the things that they can do are, I think, look to make strategic decisions around their business of how am I going to create what we call transferable value. So how am I going to get this business to a point where I can monetize it, rather through a sale from an income stream or getting some type of income stream off of it to fund my own retirement? And the idea of transferable value is one of real importance. The fact that you have to be able to take the business and sell it in the open marketplace. Even if you wanted to transition to a family member, you know, and keep it internally, it still has to be able to stand on its own. And that means having strong financials, right? Having systems and controls in place that someone from the outside is going to come look in and say, I would want to buy a part of that.
And where, on other shows I've talked about, for example, you have inventory, you have customer lists, you have other things that are of value in the small business, intellectual mm-hmm. property. Mm-hmm. Are these the things that you're talking about that you can start to put some kind of number on?
Absolutely. So businesses are valued a lot of the time based on a multiple of earnings. So they'll take earnings, net income of a business. It's a little bit more detailed than that, but let's just call it earnings, and say, okay, well, businesses in this space, say it's a long-term care company, skilled nursing facilities, for example, might have a multiple of 5 or 7 in this type of environment. And so if you took their annual earnings, multiplied it by 5 or 7, that would come to a value of the business at this time for the operating entity. So an owner needs to look at, how am I maximizing that cash flow to make my business more valuable and thus more transferable?
But also, okay, so that's maybe if you're looking further out and saying, okay, mm-hmm. the end run of my business. Not that we always want to think about that. I mean, sometimes that happens in the shorter term because you want to get rid of what you have and get into something else mm-hmm. and maybe find something more profitable to do. But sometimes you just want to figure out what you need to do with your personal life in terms of retirement while you're running your business.
Mm-hmm.
What are the things you can do there?
Yep. One of the things you can do there is start a financial plan, is to really start a plan and really get a good idea of what it means to be financially independent for you.
And there are vehicles for putting away for retirement, even if you're a small business. What are those?
Absolutely. So there's business retirement plans. As an example, you can do a solo 401k. So if you and your spouse had a business, you don't have any employees, you can start a 401k that doesn't have all of the requirements with the DOL and ERISA rules and regulations at the start. And you can put away up to $50,000 a year for your retirement.
And that is deductible, isn't it?
It is.
Overall income.
Yeah, you can put together a profit-sharing employee matching portion, even though you're the employer and the owner, you know. And so, and then you can put away your $17,000 tax-deferred.
Aren't there SEPs, too?
Yeah.
And how is that different than the individual 401k?
Yeah. So I think a SEP is the most flexible. A SEP is a separately employed pension, kind of where you have all of the contributions are from the employer. So the employees make no contributions. And the employer can turn off the contributions in a given year. Say, look, finances are too tight. We just can't make a retirement contribution this year. One of the things with the SEP, though, if you're going to make a contribution to one, you got to make it to the other employees as well. So you got to look into that and how that affects your cash flow.
And how does that play? How does the individual or the solo 401k and the SEP play against the IRA?
The four, you can add more. That's essentially it right there.
Okay, but the max is 50K,
yep.
Pretty much?
The max is 50K for a 401K. Mm-hmm. A SEP is, it gets up to 50K or 25% of your income. IRA, $5,000.
Oh, so that's really limited.
That's really
so
limited.
So a small business can take advantage of something. I mean, it kind of helps to offset that individual, Social Security tax that
yep.
small business has
yep.
to pay,
yep.
which
absolutely.
Nobody else has to pay.
Yeah, and when you're setting up a business retirement plan, you really want to ask yourself, why? What am I doing here? Am I looking to maximize my own income? Because if you have employees, you're going to have problems with the higher compensation rules. And so there's ways that you can manage your retirement plan to do that. But at the end of the day, am I trying to defer taxes or am I trying to recruit and retain employees? Those are two fundamentally different concepts.
So always go back to the objectives. That's true
That's right.
for anything when you're doing
That's
planning.
Right.
What are we trying to accomplish?
Yes, yes.
I had a guest recently, Jan Morris, on my St. Patrick's Day show where she was talking about how she financed her whiskey distillery business, which
mm-hmm.
is getting set up in Hoodsport. And I wanted to play a little clip of her talking about how she financed.
Great, yeah.
Here we go.
We found a company that helps customers or helps people who want to start a business take their money out of their IRAs, put it into a new 401k that is owned by the corporation of the business they're going to start, and then the 401k invests in the business. So we had to start a hardware distillery 401k. The 401k then bought shares of the hardware distillery company corporation.
How interesting.
So that all of our retirement is now in the business.
All of it?
Yes.
Whoa.
And then we refinanced our house to the maximum. So if this business fails, we're in big trouble.
How did you develop this level of confidence?
Well, I just think it's going to work.
What do you think of that, Justin?
I think she is confident. I think that's a good question.
Overconfident?
I hope not. I hope not. You know, previously when we talked, we had those three kind of buckets where you have business interest, then you have liquidity, then you have real assets. That's a diversification technique, right? Well, now she has her business interests and liquidity in the same bucket.
Ouch.
Yeah. So hopefully there's an ability to cash flow and buy some things outside of the business, such as maybe the land that they're on, some real estate that they could lease out, that would be a diversifier for her. Ultimately, if the business is successful, then you have a concentration of wealth that's going to be built up within that business and tax deferred, which is fantastic.
So the upside is very up, but the downside could be very low.
Yeah, the fundamental concept of risk and return always exists in the marketplace. She's going to have a lot of return, and she's currently taking a lot of risk.
I think that's what makes entrepreneurs.
Yes, absolutely.
Is that they are not risk averse.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
I think you have to be willing to take that little bit of a chance to get that, you know, no risk, no reward,
yep.
as they say. I mean... So would you advise other people to start a business in this way?
One of the things that you'd have to think about is, do you have any other outside assets? I think in the clip you just played, that was her retirement, right? And so if there was an ability to, if you had other types of assets that were going to be able to provide you income or you could sell them, or if in this case you were going to buy into this business with some other partners and you felt like it was a situation that you could cash flow it quickly, that may be a helpful way to do it. It is a nice way, like if you have worked in corporate America and you have this large 401k that's been built up over time, this retirement plan, you can, like she did, exchange those mutual funds within that 401k for shares of the private business. So I think you'd have to be careful. If you wanted to put together a financial plan, everything would have to be based on that business being successful. It'd be nice to have some other things outside of that.
You also could say that you don't have to use all your savings.
That would be key. That would be key.
Our show today is all about financial risk, and we're speaking with Justin Fisher here on Minding Your Business. The economy, as we said, is really volatile. I mean, my goodness, it's
yes.
up, 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 down, down, down,
yes.
crazy. But when it comes to a small business owner, they need to manage the risk within that volatile environment.
Mm-hmm.
What would you suggest that they do?
Yeah, so I would suggest, first of all, that you look long-term, right? So recognize that what the S&P 500 is doing might have nothing to do with your business. And just because the S&P 500 is going up and going down and inflation expectations are somewhere or another, and we don't know where rates are going to be, and we have a political situation, and go on and on. The idea is that might not have anything to do with your opportunities in the marketplace. And now might be the best time to outlay cash and get into another building, do a renovation, and take that added risk.
So there, even though that there's a lot of downsides to what's happening in the economy, that has opened the door to...
Yeah, because the economy or the downside risk in the economy that's often presented is for public companies, not the private side of the world. And we know that half of a U.S.'s GDP is comprised of private company production, over 5.9 million businesses. And so what are the opportunities in the private space that you have right now? And I'll tell you, our clients are seeing a lot of them.
So talking about opportunities, a lot of businesses have resources that they really haven't been doing anything with because they've been cautious, mm-hmm. not knowing what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
How can they leverage these resources into extra cash or things like that that will, so they're not just lying fallow?
Right, right. So in the idea of doing some business financial planning, we talked a little bit about expenses and suppliers, and the idea of how can I increase my return outside of just the compensation I'm getting from the marketplace. From
or the
selling
core
my,
business.
Yeah,
yeah,
within the core business, what can I do? I think one thing to recognize as a business or as an owner is if you have cash that's being built up within your business and it's just kind of sitting in over time, and you're not really dipping into that cash. Maybe you have it in a bank or you have it in a couple banks because you're worried about FDIC limits. Recognize that you have a treasury department and you're providing some type of treasury function. And are you doing that well? As an example, if you had $1 million of cash and invested that in a conservative portfolio of income-producing assets, that could maybe spin off, say, $50,000 a year. If you put it in cash right now with the yields or CDs right now, you're talking about $100 to $800 per year versus $50,000. So really looking and creating an investment policy statement around how much risk do I want to take? How long do I want to have these assets locked up? You know, do I want to only invest half of this? And I'm talking generally about buying some fixed income, some bonds, these kinds of things that really can spin off some additional income to help the business create that working capital.
And the only way you can really do that is if you have that plan in place so you know when you're going to need the money.
You definitely don't want to go down that road if it's anything other than creating an investment policy state and having a plan in place. What are my objectives? Like you said before, what are the risks that I want to take?
Exactly. We're here with Justin Fisher, and I've been talking about financial risk and its impact on small business here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. If you have any ideas or comments for our guests, give us a call at 866-712-1300 or tweet MYB Media. We'll answer your questions on the air.
And now we return to Minding Your Business with Robin Block on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. Once again, here's Robin.
I'm here with Justin Fisher, and we've been talking a lot about financial risk and what you can do for your small business to even things out and make it a little less risky but still make money, which would be cool. What kind of tools can a small business actually use to automate or help them keep their eye on the ball?
Mm-hmm.
What would you recommend?
I'd recommend looking at one of the things that's important in this environment is seasonality. You know, so what type of seasonality do you have as a business or income needs during that time period? A tool of that would be putting together a policy statement that would create a maturity scale for your cash flows. So looking at your cash flows and saying, okay, if I take 20% of my cash flows and invest it during this time period and 30% invest in this time period, you can literally have cash come in during months that you want it to come in based on the seasonality of your business.
Do you need an accountant to keep their eye on it for you? Can you do it with Intuit or something like that?
Yeah, you could do that internally. You know, QuickBooks would be, you know, something that could really look and say, okay, you know, if I know that I have cash coming in these months from these types of investments that I've made, then I should be able to total it up month by month.
So at least you can see the data, but then you'll need something else that says, okay, I got some extra cash now. What do you feed that to?
That's right. You can feed that into your overall kind of accounting or operating system. I think ultimately you want to have your accounting professionals be looking at that for you. You know, it takes a human, there's an art to that science. and really kind of looking and saying, okay, does that cash need to be directed one way or another? And that upstream communication back to the owner is going to be key in that regard.
Okay, so it's a combination of people and process and technology once again.
I'd say so. You know, if you have additional cash on hand, maybe you can go bid another couple projects or something like that. Or you can buy some more inventory.
And that really takes the human manager to say, oh, what's my best return? How much risk do I even want to take in that? And what's the best use
there
of my capital?
There
okay.
you go.
That makes sense. So what are some of the important changes that are happening this year in terms of small business finance?
I think some of the key things that we're seeing have a lot to do with taxes, right? So on the accounting side of things, there's a huge amount of opportunity for a small business to look at what their tax position is. The Bush tax cuts that are potentially going to sunset here in 2012 could really change a lot of things for businesses. A couple of examples of that would be looking as a business of, do you have the ability to defer your income a little bit more? Do you want to defer your income into the future, or do you want to try and take that income today? What the idea there is an example, if you were able to go change your accounting method, for example, going from an accrual to cash basis. So now...
Oh, explain the difference really quick.
Okay,
some people.
Yeah, accrual basis saying, well, if I have someone who's going to pay me, I have to recognize it as income today. On the cash basis, if it didn't come in the door, I'm not recognizing it as income. Of course, that allows me to, if you didn't recognize an income, you're not paying tax on it. And that'll give you additional cash on hand to perhaps buy different inventories or create more working capital. Be careful, though, because did you want to defer that? Are tax rates going to be higher in the future? Those kinds of things.
Are they going to be?
Most likely.
Oh.
We'd bet on it.
Oh,
we'd
really?
Yeah, most likely.
So,
you know, there's capital gains rates, for example, are 15% right now. I think the consensus would think they're going to go up to 20%. It's tough to look at an economic environment that we're in right now and not see taxes going up, given that we're at historic all-time lows for our kind of corporate tax rates and individual tax rates.
So, you know, for the larger business where they're worried about the corporate tax rate,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's one thing. But what about if you have, like, I don't know, under 10 employees? And
mm-hmm.
I mean, is that really going to impact you, do you think?
I think it really can.
Oh.
I think it really can. The idea, a lot of smaller businesses like that, the taxable income flows through to their own personal 1040, their own personal tax return. And so the tax planning ideas that you're doing as a business strategically are going to affect you individually, which ties into your concept of the what can I do to make sure I'm set up for retirement through this business, or how can I protect my personal assets. Tax planning is very important. I would say probably more important for the business that is like an S corporation that has that flow through income coming in, or an LLC that has that flow through income coming in.
Can you name some resources that small business owners can use to learn more about the tax stuff going on? I mean, I guess they can go to the IRS, of course, but which is rather complex.
For a reason probably, right? So, you know, I think talking with your tax professional. So if you have, you want to make sure that what you're working with, the CPAs that you're working with are business tax focused, that they are focused on your industry. Robin, that's huge in that regard. The IRS code varies widely by industry. And there's little nuances that you can pick up. So I would say rely on your business advisors in that regard. It's tough to really get good information from a website or the IRS or those kinds of things because it might not directly relate to what you're doing as a business.
Yeah, so you can get the general information, which is kind of good to look at before you even go to talk to your advisor. So you, at least you have some idea of what is going on.
Yeah.
And then get the real specifics about your business.
Yeah.
So when somebody comes in to speak to you, what do you like to see? What can they bring in that will help them help you work with them?
Yeah. So I think one of the key things to put together is a comprehensive personal financial statement. Some folks have to do it for the bank, for example. But to really get a good understanding of where your assets are at and value those fairly, recognize where the risks are with those assets and be truthful with yourself about that. I think that's key to put together and have that recognition. Look at the income streams that you're getting. So you can weight that, right? So if I say, well, 90% of my income streams is from one acute area of my business, that's an important recognition. That's something that should be honored, and how can I maybe diversify away from that?
I always think it's interesting to look at how a person evaluates their own risk profile.
Mm-hmm.
And I've taken some of those things online where they say, this is the kind of risk profile you have and so forth. How do you help people figure out the level of risk they can take?
That's a great question. I think one of the key things to recognize is that a risk tolerance questionnaire is one of many simple tools just to get an appetite for your risk in the capital markets. That never really tells you, though, about your risk in the private business that you own. And I'll tell you, all entrepreneurs are risky. They're not risk-averse people. So you've got to recognize that. And I think when you look at structuring your liquid capital, which is why you'd want to look at the risk tolerance, you often want to maybe bias it towards maybe a more conservative view. It's the liquid capital is the one flexible area that you have to offset risk in your business.
You're talking about cash.
Cash and investments.
And short-term investments.
Yeah, short-term. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So tell us about your favorite client, but without naming names.
I think...
What do they do so well?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I think some of our clients that are... we like to think of it like this. Of course, I'm sports-oriented, but they're the rock stars of the world, right? They're the professional athletes. And those who can inspire their employees to drive value from them in the marketplace is very tough to do. And
the ones that do it well are the ones we love.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, on that note, it looks like we're out of time. You've been listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'd like to thank my guest, Justin Fisher of Moss Adams Wealth Advisors. For more information about his services, visit mossadamswealthadvisors.com. My guest next week is Dania Pethia of Constant Contact. She'll be joining us for a talk about email marketing and what it takes to build your list and improve your response rates. Send us questions, we'll answer on the air. For an archive of today's program, links to our guests' websites, or to sponsor this show, check out mybmedia.com. And remember to join us on our Facebook page and on Twitter at MYB Media. From Money Radio, KKOL 1300 in Seattle, this has been Minding Your Business, Tools and Information for the Business of Your Life and the Life of Your Business. I'm your host and producer, Robin Block.
Listening to Minding Your Business with Robin Block, real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. To contact Robin, you can email Robin with two B's at blockbeta.com. That's Robin at blockbeta.com. Join us again next Saturday afternoon at 1 for more Minding Your Business with Robin Block here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.